Hello and welcome to Ashes of the Imperium, a 40k podcast from sunny England. My name is Dan.
And I'm Steve.
Join us as we explore the 41st millennium in all its glory, as we talk narrative gaming, Warhammer lore, and awesome hobby. From the grim dark corners of Imperial hives,
to the outer reaches of Xenos infested space.
Welcome to the Ashes of the Imperium.
Hello and welcome to Ashes of the Imperium. My name is Dan, and today I'm joined by the one and only Chapter Master Valrak. Hello, Valrak. Welcome to Ashes of the Imperium.
Hello. Thank you for having me here today to talk about Warhammer.
Not at all. We're not only talking about Warhammer, but we're talking about a subject very close to your heart, Imperial Fists.
Oh, very close. Yeah. I love me some fisting. As the slang is these days,
as the kids say. No, the kids do not say that. No, definitely not. So this is actually Explorator episode 2. So listeners may remember that Explorator came out at the start of UK lockdown, when Games Workshop kind of shut its factory doors. And Steve and I were talking about topics focusing on kind of three pillars, which were kind of lore, models, and gaming. And then obviously all the releases came out, and we've been, you know, bouncing around and talking about 9th edition, and Explorator has been left somewhat in the warp. So it's now re-emerged from the warp, you know, possibly covered in demons and all that. And I just decided to rather than it just be Steve and I talking about something we love, we thought we'd get various different people from out there in the 40k community talking about topics that they were a big fan of. I wanted to do Imperial Fists as episode 2 because not only did I want to explore a topic that I personally knew less about, because I see very much that this Explorator series as being a way for me to educate myself about aspects of the 40k lore that I'm not as familiar with, but also I am a big fan of Black Templars.
It out there. Yeah.
They're one of, when I kind of got back into 40k, you know, the usual story, you know, in my early 20s, I started out with Astra Militarum and a bit of Tyranids. And then I went into Black Templars.
Yeah.
Not only but I did a history degree and my dissertation was on the Crusades. So I've approached it from not a historical gaming perspective, but like, you know, being inspired by some of the history that I've studied academically, and finding an output for that in 40K has been quite interesting. Are you a fan of Black Templars?
Yeah. My all-time favorite character was technically, he started off as an Imperial Fist, and then he founded the Black Templars. It is indeed Sigismund himself. Love him. What a legend. What a lad. We haven't got to the bit yet in the Siege of Terror series where he just goes out and just does his thing, but there's been glimpses of it, and they're building up to it, let's say. So I think when that time does come, it's going to be one hell of a ride and one hell of a show as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that Forge Rod model, the 30K Sigismund, first captain of the Imperial Fists.
Very nice. I love his sword, that massive, huge sword. Yeah, love it.
He would make an excellent Emperor's Champion model.
He would, actually, yeah, he would. Very, very much so. I actually think, I feel a bit bad, in 40K terms, that the Black Templars themselves are such a popular faction. In, like, my personal belief, the more popular than the Imperial Fists. I am an Imperial Fist fan, and I will hands down bow to like the Black Templars when it comes to their lore, their characters. And I feel, you know, I'm just a little bit sorry that they haven't got the love that they rightly deserve. But maybe this is the addition. They get that love. Who knows?
Maybe, yeah. I was at a 40K, well, a Warhammer preview seminar thing at Blood and Glory a couple of years back. Well, you may remember these things called tournaments and events, which used to happen. Ooh,
yeah, I think so. If I think hard enough, yeah.
Yeah, I think I can just picture it in my mind. Perhaps you learned about them when on a school trip to the National History Museum. But yeah, I was at Blood and Glory, so up in Derby. Fantastic kind of convention-style event where it's got 40K, Heresy, Age of Sigmar, you know, I think there's Underworlds and Titanicus as well going on.
Cool.
All sorts. You should check it out, because you're Manchester-based, aren't you?
Yeah. I used to try and go to as many events as possible before, as I like to refer to it, as Nurgle's Plague started to take over. Yeah, and I look forward to going to more again.
Yeah, the Destroyer Hive is nothing compared to what's going on at the moment. When we start to see Typhus, that's when we get worried.
Yeah, that's when you should start retreating and definitely not go out of your house.
So yeah, so we were in this seminar, and the chap who was talking about 40K, some of the questions were, it was when Iron Hands were quite good back in that kind of era.
Yeah, oh, I remember that time. I remember that. There was so, I was amazed by how many people were actually Iron Hands fans. I was like, where have people been?
I'm just going to put this out here. I am a son. My army was Sons of Medusa, and I even have a like firstborn marine. I can find a date stamped, you know, from like 2014 or something, when I painted my first Sons of Medusa marine. And so when the rules came out, I was like, oh, this is sweet. Like, this is really good.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, as you say, there were suddenly a lot more Iron Hands fans out there.
Yeah, I was kind of in that same situation, because it was like Iron Hands, then it went to Imperial Fists.
It did go to Imperial Fists and then and some.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, this is pretty cool. And then, but people really couldn't come to me and say, oh, you're only doing this because...
You're such a bandwagoner.
Yeah, and I was like, well, I've been waiting. I've been fortifying this position for years, and now is the time. And I enjoyed every second of it.
A whole brand around my fan. Yeah.
Every single second when we were top dogs, I tried to go to as many tournaments as possible just to throw it into people's faces. Like, yep, here we go again. It's fisted time.
And I'll finish this point in a minute. And anyway, the chap said, someone said, when can we expect to see, you know, things like, the Legion Uniques in 30K, when can we see things like that in 40K? You know, are you going to bring out Sword Brethren for Black Templars? Blah, 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 blah. And he said, you know, we're not going to do a 40K book all about them. You know, you can find the rules in the books that you've got at the moment. However, there's a lot of love for Black Templars in the studio. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if some of that love transitioned into something that you can play with in the future. You know, typical GW seminar response of
yes. Yeah.
Yes, wouldn't that be a cool idea?
Maybe not kind of response, yeah. Maybe not. We'll just keep the door open just in case kind of thing.
Absolutely. There's a glimmer of a crusade in the future, but who knows?
Yeah, so where there's hope, there's a way.
Exactly, absolutely. So let's, as much as I would like to talk about Black Templars for the kind of duration of this podcast, well, let's talk about Imperial Fists. So as I said, we're going to cut this down into kind of lore, models, and gaming in a relatively loose structure.
Yep.
But I guess Valrak, who are the Imperial Fists? That's my first question.
Oh, who are the... That has probably a multiple of answers. I think it depends who you're at. To me, who are the Imperial Fists? I see the Imperial Fists as the most loyalist sons of the Emperor when it comes to Space Marines. Dawn himself was the Praetorian of Terror. He went back with his dadda to fortify his location. When everything went wrong, it was the Imperial Fists that were basically the foundation of the defense. The chapter as a whole, it's kind of evolved from the 30K to 40K because there was a lot of influence that happened around during the Beast Arises because something happened with the chapter, which was not so good. They basically kind of got wiped out. And when I say kind of got wiped out, technically they didn't get wiped out because Belisarius Call was having Primaris Marines from the Imperial Fists like in stasis, so they technically didn't get wiped out. That's my argument about that. But to rebuild the chapter, they start to take a lot of influence from a lot of other chapters like the Black Templars and stuff. So I think in a way they kind of lost their foundationness when it like comes to like their unique character, but in a way they got more character because they got other chapters, characters, and that added to it. Like, for example, the wall names was something I always loved about the Imperial Fist, and that's something that you don't really see anymore or anything. But to me, one of the reasons why I'm attracted to them so much is because of the way they go about their warfare. I'm an engineer at heart. I love castles, and the Imperial Fist are all about fortifying their location and building things. And I can just lose myself in just in the lore when they go around and build things. There's actually a book called The Praetorian of Dawn, and it was Archimus, and there was just like chapters just dedicated to like him building things and like Dawn overseeing him. And I was like, this is the best time of my life just reading this type of stuff. I love it. So I love about
them. Buttresses and kind of
yeah, that other, arc on that other, door. Other.
That's literally that's it. I ran out of castle-based words.
The degree on that wall is fine. Oh yes, more pages of this, please. Yeah, that's why I really like. I love them so much. Plus the yellow, and yellow is one of my favorite colors, and it's really bright. And people always go, "Why the yellow?" And I go, "Well, It's because so you can see us coming, because you're going to need it, because we're that hardcore. So
like it. So I might counter that if you don't mind.
Sure.
As a non Imperial Fist fan, I wouldn't just say that I'm not a fan. It's that they're one of the legions, or indeed, you know, first founding chapters that I'm actually kind of disinterested in as a first founding chapter. Because to me, they almost seem a bit boring, of like they just kind of sat there on their...
How dare you, I'm leaving.
I know. Chapter Master Valrak has left the building. Do you see what I mean? Like, you know...
No, yeah, I completely get that. Yeah.
And, I'm, you know, being a Black Templars fan, you know, I love Tyranids, Blood Angels, you can kind of, Alpha Legion probably, you definitely get my kind of, like, my vibe, right?
Yeah, like... When you compare them to other chapters, like the Blood Angels, all the character, the Halo, you know, the Sanguinary Guard, you've got Dante, Mephiston, all the characters they've got, the Space Wolves, just the same, the Dark Angels, all the secretive stuff that they've got going for them. The Imperial Fist are kind of bland, and I don't mean that as an insult. I think that's one of the things that attracts me to them, is that they are that thing, you know, there's no fancy stuff about them. They go in, they get the job done, and then they leave. You know, it's not about, you know, keeping secrets or, you know, doing paintings of Sanguinius to calm yourself down. It's just, let's go in, let's do the job, and let's get out of here.
I love it. And I like, that's one of the greatest things about this hobby, isn't it? Is that, you know, you're an engineer, and you find this lore calls to you, and you see something in it. Whereas to me, I'm a slightly hyperactive, you know, ADHD bloke, so I find things like Tyranids and... obviously being beautiful with flowing blonde hair and basically look like Adonis myself, obviously Blood Angels, no. But yeah, so I guess I'm quite hobby butterfly and quite flighty. So I quite like the kind of fast paced stuff, things like Tyranids and fast attack. And, you know, we talked about the you know, history degree in Templars. So yeah, that's one of the great things about this hobby, is that there are things out there to represent.
Yeah, everyone. Yeah. Like. Yeah, again, like you just said, it's great. You know, some people would love the Dark Angels, some people would love the Blood Angels. There's a little bit there for everyone to grab onto and make their own. And as I like to say, fortify their location and just go with it.
Excellent. And of course, they are kind of arch rivals with the... I've written Iron Hands here. Clearly, I don't mean Iron Hands, do I?
On the tabletop, it's the Iron Hands. One and two Space Marines. Yeah.
Yes, the Iron Warriors.
Yes.
So tell us about that rivalry. How did it start?
It was basically, it's down to the Primarchs really again. You know, these super gene enhanced supermen who basically can't just sit down and have a nice conversation with each other without throwing their toys out the window. I think it was Horace that said he would love to see Pertrabo go against Rogal Dorn or something. And Dorn was like, you know, that's... He'll never break me. And Pertrabo being Pertrabo was like, we'll see about that. And from there, like, their rivalry took off. It was also little things like the Emperor, the swell father he is, never really appreciated Pertrabo, never let him like build roads, always gave him like the mucky jobs. And the Imperial Fist were always cased in glory, and their battle banners were always at the forefront of the major conflicts, while the Iron Warriors are left in the dust. And from that, Pertrabo's jealousy and his envy grew, and that's where it ended up.
And because there's a famous kind of scene or moment in the kind of Siege of Terror called the Iron Cage, isn't there?
I've heard about this, and I don't really agree with this fan fiction. I don't know where it's come from. I don't know who's wrote it, but it definitely did happen to me. yes, these, well. The latest book, and I don't really want to go into spoilers on this podcast. The latest book by John French, which is I forgot what it's called now, in the Siege of Terror series. But it's by John French, and there's a lot that goes on between that with the Iron Warriors and the Imperial Fist, because I think this is their battle now at the Siege of Terror. Like, this is, it's Pertrabo and it's Dawn. It's two of the greatest minds in the galaxy at this type of warfare, basically having a chess match. And the winner conquers Terror, more or less. But from that, yeah, we go towards the Iron Cage. And that was, well, it was a trap, really. But it was also, I think in a way, it was Dawn's way of accepting his guilt over his father, because what happened with the Emperor being entombed on the Golden Throne. And as we know, with the lore, again, we haven't got to that bit. He's in that this deathless state, and it's because Horus mind zapped him, and you know he didn't want to finish Horus off. I'm sure that's going to change because some of the evidence I've been seeing, like the Emperor doesn't really care about the Primarchs that much. He doesn't see them really as sons. He more or less sees them as weapons and tools and stuff.
It's funny that we give them so much humanity because we are humans. We kind of give them, kind of project ourselves into them, right? Don't we?
Yeah, it is that. Like when you think of a Primarch, like you just said, you see them as human, but they're not human. They're so much like, they're not even Space Marines, and Space Marines are so far from humans. There's so much more than that, and I think it's something we can't really wrap our heads around. So when they go to these things and something happens to them, the way they process it, I think that's why Rogue Dawn allowed himself to go into the trap of Pertrab, or why he pressed his forces so much and he bled so much against the Eternal Fortress, Pertrab, or nicknamed it, if I'm not mistaken, at the Iron Cage. And that's why, you know, he more or less allowed his legion to nearly die in that battlefield. Then the Ultramarines came along, and I don't know what they did, but they claimed it as their victory, of course.
Day.
Yes, we are the Ultramarines. All Ultramarines always come at the end, and they always like, oh, we did this. We saved you.
Yeah, we could have dealt with you a few a little bit earlier, actually, chap.
Good old
then it would have been less saving and more just helping.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's one of these struggles, I guess, that a Black Library author must go through, is that they want to, you know, do these Primarchs a good service and represent them as these kind of entities that they are. But at the same time, humans are going to read their books and they need to make them relatable. And actually the Primarch's humanity, you know, what is within that mind is what makes them fail, isn't it? It's that they're fragile because of that humanity, the little part that's that in them.
Yeah.
So not only does an author have to make them relatable to us, but also that is the most relatable bit. So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah. Again, like you just said, no one's perfect, especially, you know, Primarchs. I think they're the most imperfect things. If you look at them with some of the things they actually do during the Horus Era, so you think to yourself, don't do it. I can see it from here. And it's like, nope, they're gonna do it.
I'm not even an Astartes, I'm just a baseline human. I can see this has got like some severe psychological issues going forward.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So talking of Primarchs, what's the deal with Rogel Dawn? Is he dead? Isn't he, you know, this kind of like, oh, he got lost meme thing? Like, as someone that isn't massively into Imperial Fist, maybe you could kind of explain that to me.
Well, the old lore, I think it was Ian Watson that wrote the Space Marine book. The old lore stated that Rogel Dawn's entire statue was encased in amber on the phalanx. It was like the sacred relic of the Imperial Fist. Chapter Masters inscribed their names into his bones. But the later bit of the lore, I think it came out in Sentinels of Terror. It was kind of like a supplement, but not a supplement, back in, was it 7th edition or 6th edition? I'm not too sure. Was it 6th edition? That is when the lore first officially changed from the body of Rogel Dawn was found to his hand was found. Just one hand. I'm not too sure if it mentions if it's left or his right hand. I'm not too sure. And that is officially the sacred relic. That is what all the chapter masters inscribe their name into now, on the phalanx. So I think the door is left open for his return. And the reason I say that is because I think...
Very good siege masters, are they leaving the door open?
The worst.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
I actually think it's down to the Horus Heresy and the success of the Horus Heresy, because when that game first came out, I remember it, and like Primarchs were coming, like I think Angron was the first Primarch to be released, and it was just like everyone who I knew was just doing Horus Heresy. Like no one was even playing 40k anymore. It was just like, I'm going to get this Primarch, I'm going to get that Primarch. And I really think GW took the page out of that. I was like, wow. I think there's a lot of money to be made from Primarchs. And I think that is why you start to see a lot of the stories starting to change. Like, it wasn't just Dawn's body being removed and it's just his hand. It was Korax was another one. There's a short story of Korax that confirms he's still alive. Jagatai Khan has got into the Webway and he's lost somewhere. We all know about Leman Russ. There's actually a new audiobook of Leman Russ. I say new audiobook, it's quite old now. When he's talking to Bjorn, so he'll return one day. The Lion, we've always known, like, he's role playing as Sleeping Beauty on the Rock and stuff. So yeah, for me, I think he's out there, and I think it's possible that they will bring him back. And I think it's just DW, like we said before, they're just covering their base. Where, you know, if they want to bring him back, they have the narrative or the story then to say, no, he's not dead. It was just his fist that was found. Here he is. Here's Rogel Dawn. He's back.
Yeah, and as a Blood Angels fan, I'm looking forward to how they reckon that.
I actually came up with a kind of a theory how they could bring certain Primarchs back, and my Dawny one was I think it involves the Alpha Legion, because the Alpha Legion and the Imperial Fist are very, very connected. I still think there's a lot still to happen with them. We all know that Dawn technically killed Alpharius or Omegan. Again.
Or did he?
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. But in that moment of, you know, they're braced, Omegan / Alpharius, like, spoke to Dawn, and then Dawn just didn't even reply. I think he just chopped his head off, or, like, he brought his chainsaw down on his head. So maybe he was telling him things like, you know, I am loyal, do this, Dawn, and, you know, it could save the day. I still think something's got to happen. I have hope in my heart at the end of the day, and that's all I'm going to live with. Please, GW, bring Dawn back. Please.
I think you're quite known for your rather excited kind of, could this be a Primarch type video discussions.
I love that. Kind of, the thing is to me is that I absolutely love Primarchs, and we've seen now with the launch of H Edition, Gilliman's back, Magnus has come back, Mortarion is back. I still think they are going to bring other Primarchs back. I think Demon Primarchs are more likely, because with a Demon Primarch, it's just like, oh, look, it's Fulgrim. Oh, look, it's Angron. You know, they're just here to do chaosy stuff. When you bring back like a kind of loyalist Primarch, I think there's a lot to go with that, from like the story wise, or should I say the narrative. How does he interact with them with Gilliman? How does he see the Imperium? Like, we've had this now just with Gilliman, and there's so much story attached to it. Imagine if they brought the Lion back and what his attitude would be. I don't think he would be as accepting.
Gilliman. I guess it's easier to introduce them into the lore, isn't it? There's an existing space for traitor Primarchs to come back in form. And as you say, you know, Gilliman's the Lord Commander of the Imperium, isn't he? Is that his title these days?
Yeah, Lord Commander, yeah.
Let's say Lionel Johnson comes back. He's the first Legion Primarch. Does he then, does he kind of outrank Gilliman? Amongst equals type thing?
This is the thing, you know. Him and Gilliman have a little bit of history. Gilliman was the one that broke the Lion Sword, because the Lion wasn't doing his job properly with the Pharos Beacon and everything like that. So is it going to be a bit of friction if they were to come back? There is so many interesting stories you can go down, but I think it will require a lot of work from GW to do. So this is why I personally think if they do bring a Primarch back, and I actually do think one will come back either this edition or next edition.
Something like Angron or Fulgrim.
Angron or Fulgrim would probably be the best, because it works on two fronts. You get a Primarch coming back, and you also can introduce a range refresh to either
the Emperor's Children or Berserkers. Emperor's Children type reveals or GW-sponsored leaks.
It's in the Psychic Awakening. There's been a lot of... There's been hints. Like, there's been like a... I think it was... The Gathering Storm was the first one that said there was like a huge snake-like figure that was causing so much damage, and it was all like redacted from the Inquisition. And then during the Psychic Awakening, it's like the Illuminator is coming. This was like all the Vox transmissions that were decoded for the Emperor's Children, and we all know Fulgrim's name is the Illuminator. That's what they referred to him as. So, it could happen. And I think I definitely do think it will happen with a demonic Primarch. It's just a matter of when, really.
Fantastic. And just a closing point on perhaps loyalist Primarchs, I think the way the galaxy set out now, i.e. cut in half, I think that's possibly a way to introduce a loyalist Primarch without it becoming a thing of they could essentially either Gilliman could not know about it and it could just be on the other side of the rift and they could exist in isolation and that could be part of the story, or they could decide to, you know, because of the rift, they say, right, you know, you take the left half, I'll take the right half, and then kind of we'll rule as equals but
in the middle,
separate dominions.
Yeah, the way I see it is kind of, well, I hope I'm right in with this analysis, it's kind of like the Western East, like empires of Rome, like back in the day, like when it was like basically their empires like split in half and you had like two different rules, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, maybe like the Lion can take the top bit and Gilliman does the bottom bit and they just do their own thing. I know Caliban. I think Caliban is in the north bit, isn't it? If I'm not mistaken. Well, it was in the north bit.
My galactic geography is pretty poor, as is my classical history.
I'm trying to look on the.
You'd have to ask Chris. You'd have to ask Chris. He's been helping you with the Alexandrian lore.
Yeah. And let's just say if they did come back, yeah, that would be a pretty cool way to do it. Yeah.
Let's talk about models. We've already touched on Sigismund, the fantastic first captain of the Imperial Fist model for the 30K series, the character series. But in terms of 40K forces, is there anything like, what is a classic, in inverted commas, kind of, what does a classic Imperial Fist army consist of? Is it, you know, like bikes for White Scars or, I don't know, assault marines for Blood Angels? Is there any, are there any Firstborn or indeed Primaris choices that you would immediately kind of label as classic Imperial Fist choices?
For me, when I think of Imperial Fists, I don't think of anything special. I know, like, you can say, like, well, Siege Warfare and stuff like that, but in terms of, like, a personal weaponry as an Imperial Fist, I think it's just a basic bolter. That's what they're known for. They're known for being brutal with the bolter, the swagger of it, and that's why we've seen their rules stem from that, where if you get a six, then it's an extra hit onto the target, because they are ruthless. They train day in and day out with their drills and stuff. Personally, if they had stuff like Breacher Shields and more like that Breacher-esque type of unit, I think that would really fit in 40K as well. I know we've had that in 30K, but we haven't had that jump over yet to 40K. And I think that's something I would personally like to see anyway, because I think that was one of the coolest units that the 30K stuff actually had, just like full, like a phalanx of Imperial Fists, all the shields moving forward, but bolts stuck out the side, just decimate everything.
Absolutely, yeah. They used to exist in 40K, didn't they? During the kind of the Imperial Armor books, I think there were sort of, you could get like, there was a siege list, wasn't there?
Was that like, I actually only really got into tabletop, like the actual tabletop side of things during it was the back end of 7th, but there was rumors that 8th was coming, so I was like, all right, I'm going to stop this because there's no point learning this book if there's a new book coming out. Like, I collected the models, but...
You did well to miss out on 7th.
I remember just learning to play it, and I was like, there's so much into this. When 8th came out, I was like, well, this seems easier. This seems okay. You know, I think I learned it in 40 minutes. Like, okay, I think I know how to play a game now. This is nice.
Yeah, that's one of the greatest things about the kind of the 7th to 8th transition is its simplicity to get into it. And that's a great thing for expanding the customer base, you know, and the player base.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's why it blew up since 8th edition, because it became more accessible to people and people just were playing more.
Definitely. Back in the day, there used to be I think it was when they did the Badab War and they had like the tyrants, the tyrant of Badab, kind of Huron Blackheart. All that jazz, and they had a siege list, so they had like siege dreadnoughts and they had breacher shield space marines, so yeah, it'd be cool to see like a Primaris. I think that's in that, you know, surely that must be in the pipeline, chapter specific Primaris units, you know, Brethren, Dornish breachers or something, you know, whatever it might be. We've even had Huskals, haven't we?
That's something I was going to mention. We've actually had Huskals mentioned in the lore. Like, they've actually brought that back, which, again, I think is pretty cool, because the Huskal was something that I really enjoyed during that, you know, the Horus Heresy, you know, like these people with all these knowledge and they're, like, they're really awesome at what they do. And it was like, oh, the Huskals more or less died out. And I think it was the Conquest Apocalypse book?
That's right, yeah.
I forgot. Was it by Josh Reynolds? Who was it by?
Exactly. Space Marine Conquest Apocalypse by Josh Reynolds.
Was it? Yeah. And I was like, when they mentioned he was a Huskar, I was like, wait, what? I need to go back and pause it. I was listening to an audio because I was like, go back, rewind. A Huskar? Like, oh, wow. This is awesome. They brought him back. This is so cool.
Yeah. And it gives space for, because they were Terminator bodyguards, weren't they?
Yeah, they were basically Dawn's. They were like Dawn's main bodyguard, but they were like leaders of the chapter in certain ways. Like the Archimus, even though he was like the head Huskar, he was like also like one of Dawn's like most trusted advisors, and you know, in like building stuff and everything, he was always helping Dawn out and everything like that. So yeah, it goes a long way. Like when you're a Huskar, it's not just a title, there's a lot of responsibility that goes along with it.
With great power and all that jazz.
Yes, with great
power. So it gives us scope to sort of see like what is a Primaris Huskar. You know, if they're not going to be Terminators, because Terminators are very much a Firstborn thing, you know, are they Gravis armored, is there a Huskar, you know, Mark X variant that they get? There's just so much out there.
Is it just like some fancy rules, like he gets an extra dice or something? It's yeah.
Is it just plus one attack for a
yeah?
Like
that's it. Yeah. Well, hopefully, like you said, they do get a fancy new model, and that goes along with everything. I think at the moment, what GW is doing is they're basically replacing the Space Marine range bit by bit, like per release. Like they're getting like all the heavy stuff out, then you know, like the light stuff that we just had with the Phobos Marines. I personally think like the next batch of Marines that we'll get are probably going to be more flyer based. Like I know the suppressors are still not a multi-part sprue, so there must be some reasoning behind that. Maybe this so-called Hell Fury that was mentioned in the Ultramarines supplement is going to be like a different variant of the suppressors. Maybe it'll have like a Volkite weapon or something. A flyer, we haven't technically had a flyer for the Primaris Marines. I know like we have the Overlord that's got mentioned in the lore. And that's, I think that's described as making a storm. Was it a Stormbird or a Thunderhawk look small? I know it can hold 100 Primaris Marines because in the latest Guy Haley book, it describes having like two big hatches underneath that holds 50 Primaris each. So,
oh, wow. You know, like a Thunderhawk transporter, but troop carrier.
It's just massive. It's absolutely huge. So I don't think we'll probably see that from GW. I think we'll we'll see that probably from Forge World.
If someone's going to make it, it's got expensive resin model written all over it.
Yeah, and if that is the case, then that's probably going to cost an arm and a leg at least.
Well, as a man that owns an Astraeus, you know, I'm sure you can appreciate a big chunk of resin.
Yeah, I do. I actually don't have that much resin, but as soon as I saw that tank, I was like, I need this.
It's so cool.
I need it, yeah.
I've resisted so far, but... So, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I think, you know, the Predator into the... What is it? The Gladius, or the Gladiator, rather. And, you know, the Landspeeders into the new Landspeeders. There are such obvious kind of similarities between.
Yeah.
It's clearly a replacement. And, like, the aggressors, are, you know, are they Terminators? They don't feel like Terminators to me.
This is one of the biggest... Well, I say it's the biggest debate. It's, like, one of the most frequently asked questions I get. Are we going to get Primaris Terminators? And I'm not too sure. You see, for me, to be a Terminator, first things first, the Terminators have such an iconic look about them. I don't think they can ever really be replaced because they're just Terminator. Again, it's just so iconic. Gravis armor can't teleport as of now. I know that can just technically be a rule change. Just, oh, they can teleport now. But you are seeing stuff like, you know, Deathwing, Gravis colors, so I'm kind of thinking that they're slowly leaning towards that direction, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see maybe something heavier, different, and that would technically be like the Terminator equivalent. As for now, I just think it's just a bulkier set of armor, and I don't really stand on that, like this is armor.
It is just Mark 10 armor, isn't it? It's just Mark 10 armor kind of, but with the Gravis variant. It's just a beefed up version, so. Whereas Terminator armor is an entirely different kind of suit, isn't it?
Yeah, I remember, I forgot who said this now, but I think it was at a seminar. when they were describing the Primaris armor, they were like, it's a multi-purpose suit. Like, you can add stuff to it and you can take stuff off from it. That's why you have like the Phobos variant. That's why you have just like the normal, you know, intercessors just looking normal. And then you have like the Gravis stuff. It's just, it can be added and added to.
It's exactly how, you know, modern militaries operate. You know, they have a set of equipment that can be upscaled and downscaled, you know, per the threat and the operating environment. And I think it's great to see something like that for Space Marines in the form of the market.
Yeah, it's very cool. Yeah.
Primaris Terminators, that would be very cool. You know, dedicated new brand of Terminator armor that allowed the legacy of the Terminator to live on, but brought them, I guess, into the modern post-Rift environment.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, this is turning into a Valrak YouTube video, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I'm gonna upload this on my channel. That's it.
Excellent.
This belongs to me now.
Just record yourself doing a lip sync backwards to it.
Yep, that's it.
So talking of YouTube, you have been fairly prolific in your building of a specific product called The Last War Project. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. Where do I start? So The Last War came about from the Beast Arise series. For those of you who don't know, there was something happened in the Beast Arise series where Terror was endangered. And we learned that Rogal Dawn in secret made this protocol called The Last War Protocol. When activated, then all successors from the Dawnian gene lineage come back together and reform themselves as a Legion once again. It's only ever used like in the most scary situations, like in this case Terror was directly under threat from the Orcs, so that's why we've seen it happen. I don't think it's happened since then, but then again, there's probably maybe other stories in the like 10,000 years that could probably still happen where we may see it activated again. And when I read this, I was like, that is awesome, because I've always been a fan of Death Watch. Like, I love, like, you know, having like different Marines from different chapters and how they all work together. And I was like, do you know what, I can actually do this now, but I can do it as just like pure Sons of Dawn. Like, let's just make like the best bloody force I can ever imagine. So I was like, all right, I'm painting all this yellow, and you know, I can paint like reds, I can paint blacks, I can paint blues, purples, whites and stuff. And it's just fun. And each chapter I do is a Son of Dawn. So I, you know, I don't lose that motivation because I'm still creating Sons of Dawn. And it is nice because there's only so much yellow you can paint before you lose your mind. So it is decent that I can paint yellow one week and then the next week I'm painting like a complete different color, which has new challenges attached to it. It's cool.
And that was something that I was talking about several months ago, of doing almost like an Indomitus Crusade army where,
yeah,
do you remember when the Primaris Marines first came out and they kind of like the first battles they went into, I think, were they wearing,
yeah,
was it all gray but with the, no, it was the, all they were all in colors, wasn't it?
Yeah, but
with a gray pad.
They have a gray chevron on their over their chapter symbol, and they're known as gray shields.
That's right.
What they're called. It's basically Gilliman's way of making the chapters work together so they don't hate each other. And he sees it like, this is why, you know, one of the ways the Heresy happened, because there was so much rivalry between the other chapters and there was no trust. So let's all be friends and let's let them all work together before they go off and join the chapters they're assigned to.
Yeah. So my idea was to kind of slightly twist the color schemes and basically do like Death Watch, do them kind of gray, but in leave my memory. I think the thing that I was going to do was basically have like lots of different things to paint, but then, and I was going to have like people from all different chapters, but it was only the first founding that they, because obviously when they reached their successor, they then repainted their colors, didn't they? They were all green blue. And I thought, oh, what a great way to have like, you know, a Sons of Aura or a Consoles. And you're like, no, they were all just Ultramarines.
Yeah, they're basically just like, you just got rid of the gray and it's like, well, I'm home.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it's a cool idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I've decided to just do Alpha Legion. So I'm
how dare doing you?
My sons. I know. Oh, we should have a battle. Alpha Legion versus Fists.
We should. I'd be down for that. If I win, you can't say technically it was like all as planned. And
it was just part of it. Hey, listen. You're onto me. You're onto my cunning schemes. The Last War, it's a cool project. I like it. It's nice and varied. And it, you know, as someone who's a complete hobby butterfly myself, I think it's a great way to kind of keep your mind in the game.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
In terms of Black Templars. Let's go back to them. Let's go, because obviously they are the best of the successor chapters for me personally.
I'm with you. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, arguably they're better than the Fists. Yeah. That's what
How dare you? So, yeah, go on. Actually, I think there's one better chapter out there, and we'll probably speak about this in a bit, but they're called The Reclaims of Dawn, and yeah, they are the number one Dawnian successors.
Bold claim. So how do the Black Templars differ to the Imperial Fists themselves? I nearly said Crimson Fists.
How can I put this into terms people understand? Imagine having two siblings, right? And one of them is completely normal. He sits there, he just, you know, he does his work, and the other one just jumps up and shouts and kicks all the work off the table. And just runs around the house, just yelling and screaming. That is basically
the. I don't want a psychiatrist appointment about my family. I want to know about Warhammer.
That's basically the Imperial Fist. Like the Imperial Fist, like, are all the calm guys, and like the Black Templars are just. I won't like to call them crazy. They're just very
passionate. I think
passionate. Yes, yeah, that is the right word. That they're filled with their zeal and their furor, and the way they go about things is the complete opposite from the Imperial Fist. Like the Imperial Fist are more like, okay, we'll stand here, we'll build a nice wall, we'll build a bastion on it, we'll shoot our guns, they'll come into it, they can't climb the wall, we win. The Templars are like, that wall, let's just charge out with our blades and just go into the body of the beast and let's just slay and purge them all. They're different, but they're great in their own different ways. I think the main thing as well is that one is very I'm not too sure if they've changed it now, like religious, like they do see the Emperor as a divine being, but I don't think they see him as a god anymore. In one of the latest books, like it was like they hated psychers and everything like that, but now they like revere the astropaths in a way, because they're connected to the Emperor, so they see that, you know, they're actually a part of the Emperor in a way, so like they revere them, they actually respect them a lot and stuff. So I think there is some things that are being changed with the Templars from some of the old lore,
because you couldn't take librarians in a Templar's detachment, could you?
No, you still can't, and I still don't think they will allow that. I think that just goes back to Sigismund and his like anti-witch ways, but I probably know why, because it's, you know, it's the warp and stuff, but Sigismund was very, very close to was it Keela? Was that a name? I think it was Keela. And she was kind of like a psycho, so I'm not too sure if something's like gonna happen there that makes him distrust her or something, and that's why they grew their hatred of the witch.
Yeah, I just do like how they're not just, you know, the successor chapters have their own identity. You know, they're not just a kind of copy and paste.
Yeah, definitely not.
Of their founding chapter.
Yeah.
Right, so let's move into gaming.
Okay.
So we've done lore, we've done models, let's talk about gaming. So we talked about the Sentinels of Terror supplement before, which was, I think we said it was 6th edition. But,
yeah.
I mean, do you think there's space in the rules environment now for a dedicated supplement to chapters like Imperial Fist, or do you think the Space Marine Codex provides enough granularity in terms of rules?
From my standpoint...
Not just wishlisting, you know?
Yeah.
Realistically.
For me personally, I think there is with certain chapters, like... If we did do it as the Imperial Fist, I think it would have grounds to stand on, because it's not just the Imperial Fists. As we stated, the Black Templars could be added into that. We know that they had their dedicated book. They no longer have that dedicated book. Maybe this is the edition they, you know, it does return, maybe not. But it would be a good way to include, you know, dedicated rules for them inside that book. It's the same with the Crimson Fists as well. There's a lot of people that love these chapters. So I personally think it could happen. With other chapters like, you know, the White Scars and, sorry, the Iron Hands, I don't think in like that same way, because you only have that one chapter, where the Imperial Fists actually have a lot of fan bases attached to not only the Fists, but there's the off routes of that chapter.
Things like the Crimson Fists, you know, if they can get a White Dwarf supplement, essentially,
yeah,
then perhaps there's scope. And maybe that's what we'll see for Templars.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm personally convinced that the Templars will get some sort of rules this edition. I don't know if that's going to be White Dwarf. I don't know if that is indeed going to be their own supplement. But I think there's just too much there attached to that chapter not to have something dedicated to them. Like, I know that they, is it like the PDF they've got now where you can just go on and download it? I think that's just not good enough for them. I think there's just so much attached to that chapter that they need something in that term of book or whatever.
Yeah, it would be really cool. It would certainly distract me from my Alpha Legion Primaris fans. the whole point is that it is one solution. You know, just paint a bunch of blue marines and then I can use them as anything I want. Yeah, I don't need to have lots of different armies, but Templars are cool.
Yeah, they are. Let's say
I was starting an Imperial Fist army from scratch. And I wanted to go like more traditional fists, maybe Imperial, maybe Crimson. Let's talk maybe Crimson Fists. So how do they differ? More doctrinally pure?
Well, technically, from a rule standpoint, the Crimson Fist have more rules than the Imperial Fists if you're just going after supplement. Because in the Imperial Fist supplement that we got with 8th edition, which you can still play with in 9th edition, there's rules in there where the Crimson Fist can take everything that the Imperial Fist can take, but the Imperial Fist can't take some of the stuff the Crimson Fist can take. So from a rule standpoint, the Crimson Fists are better. In terms of lore and how they act, they are kind of like the Imperial Fist. Like, they're not into like Scrimshaw or anything like that, as far as I'm aware. I know they more or less got wiped out during Rin's World, and of course with the introduction of the Primaris Marine now, they're probably going to be decked out more than any Dornian chapter when it comes to that new unit, because that is where all their reinforcements are coming from. But yeah, from a lore sense standpoint, they are kind of the same, but they're not the same. But there hasn't been that much lore dedicated to them to like separate them from the Imperial Fist. Like, if we talk Black Templars, we know Black Templars are completely different because of the amount of lore that they've got. We don't really have that with the Crimson Fist. I know we have the Boat Rinsworld, but that's more about the actual war for Rinsworld and fighting the orcs themselves.
Yeah, because again, it may just be ignorance on my behalf, but it's kind of, it feels like Crimson Fists are just kind of like orc hating Imperial Fists.
That's all they are. And
pretty much it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Nailed it in one.
Yeah, there we go. We hate the greed boys. That's it. Kill them all.
Oh dear. Yeah. So let's say I'm gonna go in for a kind of dedicated Imperial Fist or Crimson Fist army. You know, where does a hobbyist start in terms of?
Well, for me, I've always recommended to people to buy Primaris Marines, and the reason I've said that is because one, we're not really seeing any more Firstborn Marines being made. So I always say to people, if GW is not investing into that range, then don't waste your money and don't invest into it. Until they start investing into it, then yeah, start buying Firstborn Marines. I always recommend people to buy Bolters. I think Bolters are the best thing you could buy with Imperial Fists because of the Bolter Drill. You know, if you roll a 6... you get an extra hit. You don't have to roll to get that hit. It's an automatic hit. So if you take, as I did against Mikey at Hellstorm and his Iron Warrior Force, I took 60 Intercessors as our Boltstorm. So each one of them, we're getting 3 shots each. So per group, we're getting 30 Bolter shots. And that is, you know, not counting the 6s and back in that day, the Chapter Master could re-roll anything. You can't really do that anymore. They changed the rules of the Space Marines, damn it. It's a lot of firepower you can potentially put into your Imperial Fist lists if you bring Bolters, because mathematically it supports that type of playstyle.
So if you were looking at, so let's say, picking up a Combat Patrol box, so we've got 4 out at the moment, don't we? We've got Space Wolves, Death Watch, Blood Angels, and Dark Angels. And they all come with slightly different variations of Primaris Marines.
Yes.
And with the exception of, I believe, the Space Wolves one, which has the Space Wolves Lieutenant in it.
Yeah, yep.
And, of course, the upgrade frames. There are no unique models.
No unique models. Doesn't the Blood Angel one have... I'm thinking of the Death Guard one. I'm thinking the Death Guard has Typhus in it, doesn't it?
Death Guard has Typhus.
Yeah.
So Space Wolves is, I want to say, 10 Intercessors, 5 Reavers, the Ice Pelt Captain, Lieutenant Guy, and a Invictus Warsuit. The Death Watch 1 is 10 intercessors, 3 aggressors, a lieutenant with a sword and pistol, and an apothecary. Blood Angels 1 is 5 intercessors, 3 aggressors, 5 infiltrators, slashing cursors, an impulsor.
An impulsor.
A librarian.
And librarian.
The Dark Angels 1 is 3 inceptors, 5 intercessors, a chaplain, and a redemptor dreadnought.
Yes.
So, and of course, you get the respective upgrade frame for
the frames. I'm actually not too sure you get decals in there or not for that chapter as well. I haven't actually bought one yet because I've still got a massive.
Although all the I believe you must do because the Space Wolves have all got Space Wolf decals on them and and the Blood Angels, the Dark Angel Dreadnought's got a big sword on it. So, but perhaps you don't get the dedicated. I think like the big Primaris decal sheet has a lot of decals on them, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Different chapters.
Yeah. Yeah. The ones that come in the boxes now are just Ultramarines, the Primaris ones. Yeah, it's just pure Ultramarines. Oh. The Dark Imperium box at launch of 8th edition, that had a lot on it. I think the Indominus box had a lot on it as well.
That's what I'm thinking of. The starter set one. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah. If you bought some intercessors, like a 10-man box of intercessors, it would just have the Ultramarine symbols on there.
Cads.
Yeah, that's one of my biggest complaints. It's like, come on, give me Imperial Fist, White Scars, Raven Guard.
You at least want to have like the first founding ones in there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So, right, out of those 4 boxes, let's say I'm going to build an army. Where do I start? Which is the most fisty?
There's 2 I would definitely recommend. The one being the Dark Angel one, and one being the Death Watch one. The Death Watch one, aggressors, because of the Boltstorm Gauntlets. Now, they have changed the Boltstorm Gauntlets in a way. I don't think you no longer get to fire twice if you stand still anymore. That was one of the big incentives of having a lot of Boltstorm in an Imperial Fist Force, because, you know, double firing means double bolters, means, you know, potentially more sixes, means more hits on your target. Intercessors, of course, intercessors, bolters, auto bolters, 3 shots apiece. I'm always going to say, you know, equip it with that. It's nice to have an apothecary, chief apothecary, giving himself Lasile, 3 plus wounds on 2 targets. So you can constantly bring in people back. The Dark Angel one, I think this is the one I would recommend to people the most, because you're getting Inceptors in there. Inceptors can do a lot. They can put a lot of fire down. Again, they have bolters on there. They also have the plasma option. You've got the intercessors, as I just mentioned before. You know, you can do them as stalkers or auto bolters. The dreadnought is a big change, which is why I probably recommend it, because the dreadnoughts used to be -1 to hit when you move them, but now that is no longer in place now. So you can move dreadnoughts up the field and no longer suffer that penalty to hit when you're moving. Again, they don't really have, they have storm bolters on their nipples. I call them nipple bolters. You can do them as frag launchers or the storm bolters. They have the big Gatling cannon as well. Or you can take a plasma, but if you're not playing Dark Angels, then you probably just want like the big auto cannon on there, but it's just the rule of cool.
Dacker cannon. I think plasma is cool if that's what you're going for.
Yeah. And the chaplain. Chaplains are really, really good as well. You know, some of the auras you can actually put on your chaplains are pretty decent. So for me, this is just me. I'm not saying like this is there's probably ones out there where people can do all the maths to it and it probably may be better, but me just looking at them straight away, I would go with the Dark Angel one and then the Death Watch one.
Yeah. Mm. I think that's one of the great things about this is that you can buy a box from your local, you know, store. What are they? They're like 85 quid.
£85 now, yeah.
So if you're going through, you know, if you're going through the AOTI or the Chapter Master Valrak Element Games affiliate link.
Oh, yes.
You can flip a coin and people then they're what, like 68 quid or something, you know?
Yeah, something like that. I think it was 20% off, 68 quid.
Yeah, so, you know, if you buy a couple of those and sell
You've
the...
Because
the whole
maybe?
Point is that they're 25 pound, right?
Yeah.
That is literally the whole point of them. So you buy a couple of those, you know, you're on 136 quid or something. Sell off the frames, for the upgrade frames for the chapter, because you're not doing those, you're painting yellow or whatever. And you've got like half an army there. And
yeah, just throw in decent force.
You know, all, let's say you've got some spare Space Marine kits kicking around, like Predators and Landspeeders and, you know, kind of some Firstborn support stuff. If you've already got that hanging around, then get out your airbrush and smash down some yellow on them.
Yeah.
You know, you can buy those 2 Combat Patrol boxes and then go for the flavor.
Yeah. Yeah. Like those Combat Patrol boxes are there really to just walk you through the door, just to start you on your path, whatever you want to choose from. And then that is when you go in and start adding the things that maybe it's to your playstyle. Like again, I take a lot of bolters because I like having overwhelming fire support. I know some people play Imperial Fist completely different. A lot of people take Dreadnoughts. A lot of people take the Centurions and stuff like that. Once you start with those Combat Patrol box sets, that's when you can start putting flavor to your army. Like, just get through the door, get some models built, and then just add towards it. Then and just go and enjoy yourself. And hopefully, when you can play again, we can all play and enjoy ourselves.
Absolutely. And if I was going Black Templars, I would be tempted to find a friend who, or someone online who is going to want some Necrons, and then buy like a couple of the Elite Edition or Command starter set.
The Assault Intercessors,
Exactly. You could just swap, find someone who wants Necrons and just swap them, so you get two sets of Space Marines, because then you get Assault Intercessors and Bikes, the cool dude with the shield.
And that
feels like a more Templary force, because it's fast, it's combat-y.
That's my actually next force I'm building now. It's based on the Black Templar rules for an event, hopefully, touch wood, I will be attending in May, called SN No Retreat, run by SN Battles, a chap called Pardo.
And
his team, yeah. Amazing guys, fantastic. Really, really nice, yeah.
I had a ticket to No Retreat 6 or 7 back in the day, but sadly work sent me on a little 6-month jaunt overseas, so I had to cancel it at last minute. I wasn't even actually out of the country at the time, but it was one of my last kind of weeks
in
the country.
So you spent it with your friends and family.
Even worse, not even my friends, my wife.
Oh,
my only friend.
Imagine all the dice you've missed.
I know. But it was the right, obviously it's the right
decision. She listened, it was a great decision. Fantastic decision,
But yeah, really gutted to have missed out on No Retreat, and hopefully being able to go over to Gibraltar at some point. So tell us about this force. Did I hear you say it was Shadow Force? Or Shadow Force or something?
I'm deploying it as the last wall, but I can't take, okay, these guys are Black Templars, these guys Imperial Fist. I can't do that because that would be broken. So what I've done for this part of the last wall is this is the melee aspect of the last wall. As I said, I'm gonna run them as Black Templars, and the Black Templar doctrine is in the combat. Doctrine is sixes and auto wounds, if I'm not mistaken. Hopefully I've got that right. Yeah, I think it's sixes grant auto wounds. So this armor, I say it's pure melee. There is a few shooty things in there.
Are those shooty things armed with melter variants?
Yes, they may be gravis wielding melter boys.
This is very surprising. All right.
Well, I'm thinking
this
to
is just
myself.
For your deep-rooted love of melter-based weaponry, right?
Well, as a Black Templar, you have to burn the Heretic, the Mutant, and the Witch. And I'm thinking to myself, there's no better weapon to do that than a 21-inch melter. You can fire them from across the board. You want to burn them as fast and effective as possible. So,
some heretic creatures and witches do hide in those metal boxes, don't they? So you need some sort of tin can opener to get into them so you can crunch up the gooey center.
It's true. And when you have rules like total obliteration attached to that unit, which you can fire twice, then I don't think there's really going to be a metal box left for them to hide into.
Molten slag.
So for the HQ choice, I'm actually taking a chaplain. And the chaplain has a bunch of litanies on him that allow to fail hit rolls and stuff in combat. Some of the litanies I think he's got the Crusader helm that allows extra charging, if I'm not mistaken, and also you can put a unit into the combat doctrine from turn two, so you don't have to wait till turn three. So if we get up the board fast enough, I can put some units straight into combat doctrine and start getting the benefits from that. I'm taking the Emperor's Champion because I'm a Black Templar. You can't say I'm doing a Black Templar list and not take the Emperor's Champion. It's just one of the things that has to happen.
Which model are you using?
I'm actually kitbashing it. I saw this chap do one from the Primaris Captain and the. Do you remember that? Well, it's the Death Watch Lieutenant. You know where his sword's in the air? He's holding it in the air. He kitbashed that sword onto the captain, stood on the rock. And it looked absolutely fantastic. So I thought, you know what, I'm gonna use that guy's method. I haven't seen one better than that. So yeah, for now, I'm going to use that. Unless, you know, GW in the meantime, they managed to, you know, drop the Empress Champion. GW, if you want to, yeah, all the Black Templar stuff, you can do right before No Retreat, and I'll take over.
Imagine a Primaris Grimaldus.
That would be very nice. Very, very nice indeed.
Or Primaris High Marshal Hellbret.
High Marshal Hellbret, yeah, that could...
That could be tasty, wouldn't it?
That could be very tasty. I do think if the Primaris, the Black Templars do get upgrades, they will be all Primaris Marines.
Undoubtedly. I can't see any investment in Firstborn going forward.
Yeah, it's just the way they like. Look at all the characters they've done. I know some people are like, no, Firstborn, they're always going to be around. Yeah, I hope that's true. But I think from the business standpoint, they're slowly just replacing everyone. We've seen it for like Targaryen, Kasaro Khan, Ferios, Khalgar. It's just slowly happening bit by bit, and I think that's where it's got to go. So yeah, I predict we'll get the Primaris Emperor's Champion if it happens, Grimaldus if it happens, Hellbrecht if it happens, stuff like Sword Brethren. I think all them are going to like Primaris and stuff like that. Yeah. So yeah, it could happen. Amazing. Definitely. Where was I? The Empress Champion is part of the list. I'm taking 30 Assault Intercessors. Now, this is where they got to vary in some way, because they're not all going to be Templars. So the Chaplain, the Chaplain's going to be our Reclaimer of Dawn Chaplain. It's the Empress Champion, which of course is a Black Templar. I'm planning to take 10 Assault Intercessors from the Black Templars, 10 Assault Intercessors from the Shadow Wolves. I'm very lucky enough to speak to Aaron Dembski-Bowden, who made the Shadow Wolves, and he was giving me a few pointers, like what color they should be. I actually picked some color, and I think it's, how do you pronounce this? Exurious Purple, I think that's what it's called. And he was like, yeah, that's the color, that's the purple they should be. I was like, great. So the way I'm doing then is like, we spoke right before this show started, breacher shields and stuff, and I've actually got some 3D printed breacher shields off an Etsy shop, and I'm just going to give them the rule of cool. They're just going to have a variety of different weapons, even though I'll play them as, of course, chainswords and stuff like that, but they will have the breacher shields, and you know, some will have bolters attached to them and everything, and some power axes and stuff. But yeah, they're going to have that kind of really cool kind of breacher effect on them. And the last 10, I'm actually not too sure what to do for the actual last 10. Maybe it's again, I'll just add another chapter to the last wall, and that'll be them out the way. I think I need more green in the last wall.
Subjugators.
So, I've already done the subjugators. They've already been done.
Of course, yes. I shared my Sons of Medusa with you on Twitter.
Yeah, I think
similar green.
Yes, the moot green. The glorious that is Moot Green.
The glory that is Moot Green. I went for Vallejo Escorpina.
I just went Moot Green. That's Moot bright.
It's an intense green, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm thinking of is it what they call the Emperor's Swords, I think they're called, or something like that. It's the ones that got two swords crossing. The Emperor's Warbringers. They're like a dark, greeny, like khaki kind of colorish
cross swords, yeah, kind of like raptors-esque,
something like that. So I think I made you
Death Guard green spray, that'd be nice and easy.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's, you know, I'm very lazy when I come to do my hobby, so if there's a spray out there, I'd be like, right, there we go, that is me. Less work, more fun. I'll probably do them, and I've got 15 Blade Guard on top of that. So again, I'm breaking these up into three five-man squads. I'm going to have a five-man squad of Astral Knights, a five-man squad of Hospitallers, which are basically like Emperors, Black Templars, but they wear white and have red crosses on them, and a five-man squad of Hammers of Dawn, which I'm going to kitbash and give them Thunder Hammers and stuff to go the rule of cool with them. I've got an Apothecary in that list, and he's going to be Chief Apothecary. He's got the Vox Esperon to put his ability to 9 inches, if I'm not mistaken. He's selfless healer. So he can give out 6 wounds back to two different, sorry, it's 3 wounds to 2 different units, so 6 wounds altogether. And of course he has the Feel No Pain 5 up? Is it 6 up or 5 up? I forgot what it was now. I think it's 6 up. And lastly, I've got the 12 12 Eliminators. And sorry, not eliminators, what they call them?
Eradicators.
Eradicators, yeah. 12 eradicators I've got to add there. Just for fire support. And again, it's lore because they want to burge the heretic. So
yeah. And also, if you're going to go flying all the way over to Gibraltar to play at no retreat, you've got to bring your A game.
Well, the thing is, I actually saw this as like a fun event, but then I saw Steven is going from Vanguard Tactics and he's just like the most amazing player I've ever witnessed. Like, I think he's like the god when it comes to like playing Blood Angels. And he's been talking a lot of smack about me on his streams. Like, I've heard Varrax an undefeated champion. That won't last long. So, right, do you know what, Steven? I'm gonna purge you. I'm gonna let the whole world witness it as I purge you. I'm gonna bring you down in front of everyone. Your hubris will be your downfall, sir.
Excellent. Love a bit of pre-tournament smack talk.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no retreat sounds amazing, and I was really gutted not to be able to make it back in the day a couple of years ago. Maybe in the future. Who knows? Fingers crossed. Let's talk about in terms of hobby. Yellow, you said you like painting yellow. It's a lovely, vibrant color. And the yellow that you've got, your kind of scheme is very, it's very striking.
Yeah, it's very
yellow's kind of got a bit of a rep for being a difficult color to paint.
I went through a lot of processes when I started yellow. Yellow, black and white, I think are the three main colors that people always have a lot of trouble with. Like when I first attempted yellow, I just sprayed Avalon Sunset and I just put Euro Yellow all over. And I like it looked okay, but it was just missing something. And then one day I was watching the Warhammer TV YouTube channel with Duncan, and he was painting, I think it was a Gargant, and he was painting it as Bad Moons, and he used Avalon Sunset Spray, and then he put something called Lamenter's Glaze on it, and he put it all over it, and like the wowness of like the yellow he got just from the glaze onto it, I was like, is it this easier? Is this all you do? And I got it. I tried it myself, and I was like, wow, this is it. I've struck gold. And from then, that's the process I've got, and that's what I've stuck with. Sadly, they discontinued glazes, but before they did that, I more or less bought up as much stock as I could find. I've got like 48 bottles of it shoved in my drawer, which people call me out on every single day.
I was
share it, Barrett. Share it. No, it belongs to me.
I stumbled across that. I was looking for pictures of, I found some pictures on Reddit of your tanks, and someone was like, he bought all the out-of-production Lamenter's Yellow like a selfish beep. You know, he should do a solid and give it away to the community.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah, I was like, you should give it to your subscriber. And I was like, no, I'm not. It's mine. Belongs to me. What are you going to do? It's mine.
Oh, there's plenty of ways to make other products out there. You know, there's plenty of ways to make yellow ink based washes or blazers.
Yeah, I think there's a YouTube video. Actually, there is a YouTube video of a chap who gets army painter inks, and he just puts a certain amount of water into it, and it just makes the glaze. But the thing is, I've got this glaze, so I haven't tried it out. I'll try it once all this glaze is out, when that day sadly comes. But yeah, until then, I'm just going to keep using my Lamenter's glaze and enjoying it.
I think so. Juan Hidalgo does a Citadel glaze.
Oh,
I think that's the guy. He uses the game ink.
Stuff. Is he Spanish? I think he's the guy with the Spanish accent. Yeah, I think I think we're on about the same guy.
He does the heavy contrast marines.
Oh, okay.
He does the kind of like heavy metal style tutorials, but you know, mostly using contrast.
Yeah,
which is I think it's fantastic at what he's doing.
Yeah,
because
contrast
has got this rep of like, oh, it's what you know in body is like terrible painters use. You know, one thick coat is all you need. It's like, contrast is just another tool in the painter's arsenal, right? Sometimes one thick coat is perfect for what you need.
Yeah.
But if you see what this guy does with contrast, it's amazing.
Yeah. I actually use contrast, the Black Templar, for my Black Templars. I think it's one of the greatest paints they've ever invented. It leaves like an awesome matte color to it as well. It's like, this is really, really good. And the white, the apothecary white, I'd also recommend that to people.
That's really great for
doing white. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, any tips on painting yellow if you don't have access to a secret store of Lamenter's Yellow?
A secret store. I would say just take your time. One of the things that I tend to do as well is pin wash the model. I think it's recess shading. I go around all the model with like a really thin detail brush, and like all around the knee pads, where all the armor overlaps, where you expect like to get like a kind of a shadow of some sort, I put Avgrax Earthshade in there, so it breaks the model up and adds some definition to the model. So that is something I'd recommend for people to do as well, because if you just spray it all yellow, it gets lost in that just blob of Yerel. So you just want to try and mix it up and make it stand out as much as possible.
And I've seen a lot of people use kind of like spray it gloss varnish and then use like oil paint thinned down with, say, white spirit.
Yeah. There's so many, like everyone has their way to do it. Like I have my way, and some people have tried my way and not got my results. And I say to them, I don't know what to say. This is, you know, I'm doing what exactly you do. It's just people always find different ways to do it. Like I tried other people's ways to try and get their methods, and it never came out. And I just found my way and just went with it.
I think that's a great thing to do in the hobby, is just like finding what works for you. Like I know if I have too many stages in a paint scheme, then I won't do it. Like I'll stop after like the seventh marine.
I'm very lazy. So, you know, as less work I put into a model, the more I get into that model, because like I can do so many of these models and just make like an army of it. Like my yellow, it's just Avaland, Avgrax in the Recess Chases, Lamenta's Glaze, and a bit of Battle Damage. And that's it. And of course, like painting the pauldrons black and for the company colors. And that's it.
There's a lot to be said for consistency. Like, consistent across a whole army, consistent and tidy across a whole army will look better than bearing in mind, like you don't look at your armies through the lens of a camera or on Instagram.
Yeah.
Like it's great if people like your model on Instagram, you know, fine. But like take a step back and like look at the army, look at the unit. Like
I've always said, look at the army as if you're playing it on the tabletop. Like look at it, because that's the view distance people are going to be looking at. That's the way you're going to be looking at it for. If it looks good from that distance, then it looks good. I know people say, take pictures of it. It doesn't look that you, but you're getting these cameras now that I've got like 20 megapixels on them, like for the phones and stuff. They're going to pick up every bit of detail. And some of my models, they have horrible details on them, but from a distance, they look great. And for me, that's all that matters.
News just in, if you use a macro lens under a daylight bulb, model, it might not look as amazing as you think.
Wait, this is not a GW model. This was a look like on the
bottom. Latham hasn't painted this. I've been lied to. Yeah, like, I don't know. Yeah, I completely agree. Like, you know, 6 foot, what is it, the 3 foot test or whatever, you know, like, stick it out on a dining room table under a warm light or whatever and see what it looks like. Not necessarily on your painting lamp.
And yes. Sometimes I always say to people, don't expect it to be right out the box. Like when I first painted my first model, it was atrocious. I actually got my girlfriend to pay me. I was that bad. I was like, I can't do it. And she was like, well, you spent all this money on it, now I'll pay you. And I was like, okay, then you start painting these models for me. And then I just got into it a bit more. It's just, you know, getting some confidence, watching videos, watching tutorials, and just go with it. Just learn to make mistakes.
Make mistakes. Yeah, that's a great point as well to kind of draw on. Is like painting is a journey and hobbying is a journey, and we're all on that journey at some point in our lives, you know. And you're constantly learning. Like I've been talking to a friend of mine, Terry, who's he's won, I think one of his Lord of Change won a bronze in Golden Demon before.
Well,
he's a phenomenal painter.
Yeah.
And he's constantly learning. He's constantly developing as a painter. And we're constantly, you know, when we're on like Discord hobby chats, you know, are we talking about a technique? And I'll be like, oh, what could I do here? And he's like, oh, well, can you try this, try that? And you just by talking about the hobby and engaging with people, whether it's watching tutorials or talking amongst your friends, you learn. Like I've learned a huge amount from him. So he's recently, relatively in life, you know, left his job and has become a full-time commission painter.
That's amazing, yeah. That's
awesome. He paints for Siege, and he paints like award-winning armies and models, and you know, just being able to. I don't know, not everyone has like, you know, personal access to someone like that, but like there are so many people out there that are making amazing painting content that you can learn just by watching them, and actually, not do what I think I'm guilty of sometimes, is kind of putting on a painting video whilst I'm like having lunch and like almost like watching it as background TV.
Yeah.
Watch it to pay attention to it and like write stuff down and
To learn from it. Yeah.
Yeah. Learn from it. Take it almost like an Athena. Like it's a revision topic of like, when someone says, oh, do this with a wash, actually like go back and watch that bit a couple of times and kind of understand why you're gloss varnishing something before you put a wash on it, you know, surface tension.
Or definitely. Definitely.
If you want to prove in something, you've got to put investment in it. You know, you've got to practice and invest time into it.
Definitely. Yeah. Massively agree. I think that's one of the beauty things about YouTube as well. There's just so much content out there. There's literally just hours and hours of content for you to learn from, and all different techniques. And it's just there. Just search it and just go at it.
Find what works for you. So what basing works for you? You know, given not only that you've got to fit it with yellow, but you've also got to fit it with all the various different colors of your last ball.
Yeah, well,
vertical.
I went into this with, I wanted the bases to be very, very contrast from each other. So I thought, what's the best contrast color you can use? And I was like, white with snow kind of works because of Inuit Imperial Fists. You can have that kind of lore to it as well. So all my stuff is, well, it's not fully snowy based like you'd find on Space Wolves. Like, it's just covered in snow. It's kind of that urban type of Stalingrad-y effect, I would probably call it, where... urban winter kind of effect, where, you know, you see more of the rock breaking through and clumps of snow in certain areas. And for me, that gives me the nice contrast to my models. Even with like the white models I've got, like I've got some excoriators, and it looks really, really nice with them. What I use for that is Astrogranite, that's it. The grey Drexler paint. The process of this is just put that on there, put it thin. You don't want to really clump it on. You don't want it to be massive. Just put, you know, less is more, I always say, and then just build up if you need to build up. After that, I just give it a full wash of Avgrak Surf Shade to go into the recesses. Then I dry brush it with... what's it called now? I should have prepared for this. It's kind of a light one.
Codex Grey? No, that's the old.
No, it's not Codex Grey.
Administratum, Celestra, Dawnstone, Mechanica Standard.
I think it's Dawnstone. I think that's the one.
The mid grey. Yeah,
something like that on it. And then all I do is add the snow, which is the Valhalla Blizzard. Again, another technical plate from GW. Again, less is more. Make sure you shake it. The newer pots I found are very, very watery. Like, the old pots were kind of chunkier, but the new ones are very, very watery. So make sure you give it a really, really good shake. I know people are buying the machines now, like those like nail varnish machines where they vibrate the paints. Maybe invest in one of them. So get it really shaken up. Get like one of these like little spatula tools. Just put that onto the base. Little clumps. Again, less is more. And that's the base done.
Amazing.
But yeah.
And of course, if you needed to put any casualties, you know, any kind of models on there, maybe painting them silver with a few hazard stripes.
Easy.
That fits in.
Easily done.
Strangely fits in. You know, if you've got like, you know, Astrogranite and snow, a kind of dark bolt gun metal style, or lead belcher as it is now, model on the base actually would work well, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I've actually got one on my base. The first Chatsmaster Varrak model I got, like non-reclaimer Varrak, is actually stood on an Iron Warrior. And it works perfect.
He's kind of leaning over on his knee, isn't he, with his helm tucked under his...
Yeah, it was. I think it's Sergeant Joven model, if I'm not
That's
mistaken.
That's right, because it was an orc with a chainsword in him or something.
Yeah,
it was
that one.
Ah, cool. Yeah. Awesome. Well, Varrak, I think that is slightly longer than I told you this would last. But
no worries, no problem.
We've explored lots of different aspects of Imperial Fist. We've taken the show notes and kind of explored around in the shadows.
I've enjoyed myself.
Thank you ever so much for taking the time this evening to chat about the Seventh Legion.
No worries. Yeah, I've enjoyed myself. Thank you for having me.
Not at all.
Been really great.
Of course, you are Chaps of Master Varrak of YouTube fame. Do you want to kind of give a quick shout out to the channel or anything like that?
Yeah, if you want to come follow me, just search Chats Master Varrak. I have a Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. I just normally post hobby stuff on there. Twitter is normally for just memes and just taking the fun out of Iron Warriors, really, that kind of stuff. But yeah, just search me in Google. I'm sure something will pop up. There we go.
Absolutely. And Varrak will be sort of tagged in all the various different posts of, you know, the tweet will have his Twitter in it. The Insta post will have his Instagram in it. And of course, you could check out the show notes on Anchor or whatever podcast catcher you're using to find his channel on YouTube. Yeah. So Varrak, that's us done. Thanks ever so much once again for joining us. And our little slogan on Ashes of the Imperium, I think, is very apt. It's keep calm and crusade on.
Oh, well, yeah. Hopefully the crusade will be answered this edition. And we will be very calm. Well, I won't be calm about it. I'll be losing my mind. I think it's going to be the world. So, yeah.
And me both, buddy. You and me both. Cheers.
No worries. See you now.